Good day and welcome to I Don't Get It, the pop culture Get Off My Lawn cast. This show features the hopefully, arguably, debatedly, open-minded musings of two late 40s curmudgeons as we stare down the reality of our entertainment irrelevance. I am your co-host. My name is Noah Tarno. Greetings. I am the founder and the senior quiz master of The Big Quiz Thing, the trivia game show spectacular. And I'm here in San Francisco, California, and joining me this time and every time from all the far away in Amsterdam, the Netherlands.
My name is Bill Scurry. I am putatively the founder and proprietor of something called American Caesar Enterprises, which, as you know, is the home of excellence.
That's all you're going to say today, the home of excellence?
What's left? I mean, that's our reputation.
It's pretty vague, yeah.
It's vague? I don't know. I think it says a lot about where the excellence lives.
Yeah, it's home, so to speak.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
It's like a politician who says, vote for me because I take a stand on the things that matter most to you.
What would those things be?
The issues of the day. Anyway, this show, we jump into usually pop culture, look at something that's happening that's new, that's fun. And this is a topic, pretty hot, pretty new. It's basically a television show. It's funny. At first, I remember like 10 years ago going, well, can we really call Orange Is the New Black a television show? Because it's only online. But I think we've crossed that Rubicon and these things count as TV shows, right?
I mean, can we call this thing a phone if it's not hooked up to the wall with like a mouthpiece and the thing you put up to your ear? I'm just saying it's
Yeah, but you do call people on it.
Uh-huh.
I think that's pretty clear that an iPhone or an Android or whatever is a phone, a telephone. You reach people via... I mean, does it count as telephonic technology?
Why do they call it a ferry?
Telephone.
Is a ferry a thing that you put a car into, or is it like Peter Pan's little buddy that flies through the air with wings, you know?
What?
Yeah, exactly.
They're spelled differently.
It's the home of excellence.
Oh, that kind of excellence. Being excellence at being a dumbass. Okay, I see. All right. Anyway, so this topic, we're talking about this show. It is found on Amazon Prime. It officially debuted in January, although the pilot episode was released on YouTube way back in October of 2019.
Jesus. How old are we then, Noah? 23, 24?
I'm younger than that.
So long ago. Christ.
Four or five. Yeah. Anyway, the show is called Has-Been Hotel. It is not the Has-Been Hotel, as I thought at first. It is Has-Been Hotel. It is not Has-Been Hotel. It is Hazbin Hotel. Has-Been Hotel. This is a recommendation to me by a young friend, a 16-year-old friend.
Oh, that sounds weird.
Relax.
All right.
Just please relax. Anyway, she told me she really likes it. Kids at school are talking about it. She's a sophomore in high school. And Has-Been Hotel is an animated show. It is the brainchild of Marylander and School of Visual Arts graduate Vivian Medrano, who is 31 years old.
Yeah.
She was born in 1992, my friend. She is also known by the online sobriquet Vivzy Pop. She started a very popular YouTube channel, I believe, in 2012. She did a webcomic called Zoophobia. She made several self-made animated shorts that accumulated tens of millions of views, developed a rabid fan base. She made, this sounds smart. This is the way you get attention if you're like a DIY animator. Videos of existing songs. She did a very popular homemade video of Kesha's song, Die Young. I actually know that song. So, that one jumped out. I mean, there's also some Pitbull song I never heard of. And then in 2016, she started, I believe she suspended Zoophobia because she started working on Has-Been Hotel, or as my notes app autocorrects Has-Been to Harbin. So it says she started working on Harbin.
Yeah, what the fuck is up with that? Because I had to keep changing it manually from Harbin Hotel, which is the town in China. Right. By the way, I hate to sidetrack. Harbin Hotel actually has a lot of Jewish architecture and Hebrew lettering left over because the Russian Jews, when they were being expelled, stopped in Harbin before they came over to the United States. I don't know if you knew that.
Jews stopped Europe to China?
Yeah. They went from Russia. They were going to the west coast of America. And so they went through Harbin. China was the gateway. There's actually Hebrew and Jewish culture from Russia left over there.
Interesting. Yeah. So there is a town in China called Harbin.
Yeah.
You're telling me.
Yeah.
Is there actually a Harbin Hotel there?
Well, there are hotels.
There's probably a hotel there.
Utter tangent.
Right. So she start. Well, that's what we're about. So she started working on Hazbin Hotel in 2016 via a very successful Patreon campaign. Patreon, former I Don't Get It, Pop Culture, Get Off My Long Cast topic. She released the pilot episode. What's a pilot? Of Hazbin Hotel.
Callback.
I don't watch TV. Yes, but you are aware there is an invention called television.
That invention they showed.
Sorry. I love that. That's good. It's a Pulp Fiction quote, people. So she released the pilot of Hazbin on YouTube in October 2019, as I said. And then a month later, she released a pilot of a Hazbin spinoff called Hell of a Boss, which I have not watched. Did you watch any Hell of a Boss?
No.
Okay, me neither. So that pilot by last month, February 2024, had racked up 101 million views. In August of 2020, the production house studio company A24 picked up Hazbin for a full season, only like 8 episodes. And all 8 episodes dropped. Is it 8 or 9? I believe it's 8. You tell me.
Yeah, 8.
8. Okay. All 8 episodes dropped 2 months ago, this past January, and it's been a big critical and fan hit. It is the story of Charlie Morningstar, who is the daughter of Lucifer, the devil, you say, and she is the princess of hell. And apparently in this version of hell, there's an annual purge. Angels come down from heaven, they kill a whole bunch of hell's population. And this distresses Charlie, so she opens a hotel, the Hazbin Hotel, or just Hazbin Hotel, as a way to redeem the demons, you know, kind of rehabilitate them so that they may enter heaven and avoid the purge. It is mostly a comedy. It's a dark comedy. It is for adults. There's a lot of dirtiness, dirty words, perviness. Among the other wacky characters are Angel Dust, who is a three-armed porn star who lives in the hotel. Like I said, very explicit. Charlie's girlfriend, Vaggie, which more sensically the notes feel changed to Maggie, but it's Vaggie. A wolf-like bartender named Husk, the impish Nifty. It's got a wonderful cast. Some Broadway stars, Erica Henningsen, most famous for originating the role of Katie, the Lindsay Lohan part in Mean Girls musical on Broadway. Alex Brightman. There's Kimiko Glenn, who I know from Orange is the New Black. Keith David is in this. Yeah. He plays Husk.
Genre stalwart.
Yeah. Stephanie Beatriz, who is a cast member of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And it's a musical. It's a musical. 11 songs from it were released as singles as part of a Hazbin Hotel soundtrack in January. And several of those songs have appeared on, you know, the lesser Billboard charts and are getting tons of streams. Among them, in episode 4, 2 songs, Loser Baby and Poison, both have somewhat gone viral. And it's getting mostly very good reviews. And as I said, a lot of high school kids are into it. It's picking up a lot of steam. It's definitely a hit. Second season already in the works. So, Bill, what did you think of not Harbin, not the, not Hazbin, Hazbin Hotel?
This was obnoxious and grating. I mean, I hated just about every single second of it. I don't think that's a hard prediction to make if anybody's
in. No, well, you hate musicals anyway, right?
I hate musicals. I hated it before they started. So you know what? By the time they started singing, I was shooting daggers at it with my eyeballs.
Right.
But here's the thing. Right. It's easy to sit here and say I hate it, and the reasons why I hate it are manifest and they're explicit, and I'll make them explicit in a moment. But the thing is, what I want to do is give Medrano a lot of credit. I think that this needs to be discussed kind of apart from the content. Not for the form necessarily, but for like the function of it. But just for one more second, I hate the character designs. It's that very sort of angular, hyperbolic, slim, thin, Gennady Tartakovsky style. That kind of like
they're very spiky. They're very spiky.
It's born of like a Cartoon Network circa 2004 design. Which, you know, it's like that's, you know, it's, there's a couple of different schools of thought when you're making animation. The question is, it's like, do people, like, what was your influence? Did you come out like watching Dragon Ball Z and things like that? You know, Naruto or is it like this, where I think that Medrano probably came up watching Powerpuff Girls and
yes,
stuff with Samurai Jack and stuff like that. It has that very, it's a, the characters are come out of the same kind of like visual lookbook of it. Yeah, and the whole thing about making him cute, making it hell, and all this stuff was so, it was so dumb. It was so superficial. The stories were terrible. I don't understand the mythology of it. It doesn't make a lot of sense. It doesn't make any sense.
I have no idea. Yeah, it's very convoluted.
It's so outrageous and like so obnoxious. It's so the idea of like just trying to like rub your face, and the writing is so amateurish and churlish, where it's just trying to scandalize you by using the word fuck all the time without it. It sounds like a kid doing stand-up comedy for the first time in college, and they're just using profanity without any kind of sensicality to it. Just about everything about it is yeah. And the musical, look, apart from the music, yes, I hate musicals. I don't necessarily know what the musical was doing here necessarily. It doesn't add much to it, unless they're thinking of that like crazy ex-girlfriend type of bolt-on, where there's the aspect of adding musical theater to something that's really dark to kind of like put a spin on it. I don't know, but let me tighten the faucet on that for a second. Talk about what Vivian Medrano did. I think is great. It is this idea of it's such a bitch to get into motion picture filmmaking. It's such a bitch to crack into anything creative that you're trying to break into what is still a very corporatized structure. And so she started her own art. And, you know, animation is one of the last, you can still make music, but you can't break through with music. But animation seems like a thing where you can get a toehold of very dedicated people, especially if you find your audience. And it looks like from, again, the style of these characters and her particular idiom, it looks like she knows exactly who the audience is. They find their own water level, what they're looking for. And she created this thing. She found people who were willing to pay for it for proof of concept. She did the work. She actually founded a fucking animation studio in Burbank.
Yeah, she
put
did.
This together.
She
hustled her ass off. She got paid. And it doesn't look like she cut a single corner. Now, I think her art is extremely middling. It's extreme. This is mediocre. I'm not saying she won't be capable of something greater. I am very happy to see a contrast to that shitty Cal Arts animation look, because it's like the high echelons of this industry animation. If you look at what is it, Illumination Studios, Pixar, those all come through one classroom. The Cal Arts animation is the factory that pretty much creates most of American animation. DreamWorks, all these things, Kung Fu Panda, that's one single program that gave birth to what is Shrek. Everything you can think of came from like almost like a series of 5 to 10 classrooms in California. It's extremely hermetic, and you know the corporations have steered down one little blind alley in terms of what everything has to look like. The fact that she's using this and she's getting paid and she's breaking into the world of animation the way you do, you know, when it was hand drawn, you couldn't do it. But since it's all digital, essentially, and it's easier to come up with a small boutique studio, this should be a great roadmap for creating great, great art in the future. If not great art, then at least art that is, that people find, you know, that somehow speaks to them, that sort of thing. You know, the other thing I'll say about this too, is that in terms of her finding this audience, is that the musical theater part obviously has a lot to do with it. The fact that they're somebody that looks like perhaps they're either a queer and or non-binary porn star, somebody who's constantly talking about getting ass fucked or intimating.
Yeah, that character is very gender non.
Yeah, I think
pin-downable.
It sounds like a masculine voice, but it could be anything. I mean, who knows what, you know? Yeah.
I think that's the point. I think, and you know, the main character has a girlfriend, and it's really not
there's commented on
much.
That's the thing. This really skews heavily queer, and I think that we're still doing a lot of housekeeping in our industry, in our animation world, of like trying to make these things so broad and so inclusive to people who haven't seen themselves in animation before. And the other thing I could think of we did Steven Universe about 4 years ago, maybe five years ago.
Yeah.
That wasn't like pressing the gas pedal on sort of queer and non-gender conforming things, but it was very heavily thematically wedded into that, you know, people kind of like changing gender identities in the middle of the show.
This feels like the same audience, but now they're older.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's like, I don't want to get ahead of myself just by throwing dirt on the thing. I mean, I really hated it. I think it's terrible. I think it's a terrible cartoon. But I think that in terms of, you know, this is the very remit.
But
of
A, our but show. A for effort or B plus for effort is what you're saying?
Yeah, this is like the very remit of our show. I think it is that fine line between talking about a phenomenon and separating the phenomenon and saying it's like, look, Vivian Medrano's not the only person who's done this. You know, Seth MacFarlane kind of got into the industry doing the same thing, and he wrote it to a gigantic payday. You know, 20 years ago. 25 years ago, you know, but it's nice that to know this can still happen. It looks like it's happening to, you know, and I can't hate the fact that it's happening to Medrano. It seems like a decent incident.
Yeah, I mostly agree with you. I really didn't like this. I mean, and I like musicals. It has a lot going for it. You know, it has a real sense of fun. I think the songs are well written. I think the voice cast is uniformly great. I think every single one of them gives a good performance, but the scripts and the plot need serious, serious work. This show is boring, really boring. It was a slog for me to get through. I made it through 4 episodes and it was tough.
I made it through 2. I can only do 2.
Yeah. It was, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people love this, you know, and it's one of these things where I'm like, great, this is so not for me. And you know, but, you know, I don't know what's going on. This whole thing of the heaven, hell thing is
really... I couldn't tell one character from another.
Yeah, the characters are very poorly thought through. And there's a great point. I'm going to quote this great article, Bobby Schroeder, who just essayist on Medium, but really, I think, hit the nail on the head in a lot of ways. And they point out that the whole hotel conceit doesn't really work. I mean, hotels have been a long time... you know, good setting for comedy. You know, think of sitcoms like Fawlty Towers and Newhart. And Schroeder brings up like the great thing about a hotel, every episode, the new wacky guests who come and go, right? And they bring up that they're like, no wacky guests. No one new shows up at this hotel. Why is it a hotel?
It's alliteration. It's got to be.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, and Charlie is a drip. The dirty language feels really fake and not organic. It feels like, ooh, we're being edgy, you know, like it just really, all the sex and dirtiness, you know, they don't come by it honestly. They come by it like literally like, oh, what if we made Steven Universe dirty? I mean, that's honestly what it feels like, because Steven Universe and Charlie are peas in a pod. They're like the optimist in the world of unusual people, you know? And the buoy bobbing in the ocean of craziness. The show is flat out not funny. I didn't laugh once. And it's tonally a real, real jumble. I mean, it's ridiculous comedy 1 minute. And then there's an unearned power ballad, an emotional power ballad that just comes out of left field. And then in episode 4, which is really shocking, there's a content warning at the beginning about sexual assault. And I'm like, whoa, there's a scene. I mean, it struck me less as I'm no expert. It struck me less as sexual assault and just sexual abuse. Basically someone saying like, I own you and you're going to, you know, basically like you're my sexual slave, or like you're going to fuck in this porn movie because I tell you you are. And it's played way too straight. It almost made me uncomfortable to see these crazy, wacky characters, you know, acting out a scenario that is that I'm sure that does happen in the real world and shocking and horrifying. I agree with you. The design is not good. The characters are a little monochromatic. It's hard to tell them apart. Yeah, it's a bit of a mess. And we talk a lot about in the show about first pass comedy, you know, humor's like, that's a funny idea. Throw it out there. And I think it's hard to argue that Medrano or anyone else involved in the show is giving a first pass. There's clearly a lot of craft and a lot of care taken in this. So I don't know what I'd call it. It's not first pass comedy, but it's a cousin to it. And Schroeder, there's a long quote here from Schroeder I'd like to read that really sums it up to my mind. Quote, I can easily envision a timeline where A24 got an experienced showrunner in as a supervisor to shepherd the project along, showing Vivzi the ropes and helping her bring out the potential of these ideas. That isn't the version of the show we got, though. Instead, all of the worst tendencies from the pilot were doubled down on while much of the potential went out the window. And it's harder to give it the benefit of the doubt when it's gone from being an indie passion project to being a major tentpole animation release for Amazon. And I think that's the point. Vivzi's got a lot of talent, a lot of imagination. I presume you could see it in her early work. And yeah, Indie Passion Project, Patreon, great. It's going to be a mess. But for whatever reason, A24, Amazon, whoever didn't say, all right, we're gonna hone this stuff so it's ready for prime time. They just threw it out there, figured the huge following would eat it up, and apparently they are eating it up, right? So, you know, I'm sure Amazon's happy with this, but in terms of a piece of art, I think it's very lacking and a lot of squandered potential.
Once upon a time, there was a glowing city protected by golden gates known as Heaven. It was ruled by beings of pure light, angels that worshipped good and shielded all from evil.
Put your hatchet away for 1 minute. Can you please tell me why this thing is popular?
Well, I think 35 years or whatever on since the debut of The Simpsons, you know, Simpsons blew people's mind. Oh, a cartoon for adults. Even though, you know, that was kind of what The Flintstones was about in the 60s, but people forgot. I still think the juxtaposition of a crazy cartoon and dirtiness, and this thing pushes the dirty meter. I mean, it's very sexually explicit, but again, it's bolted on. It's more language. It's more, you know, the telling instead of showing, which is a storytelling sin, as most people know. But that juxtaposition still gets attention, the naughty cartoon. There is that sense of representation, which is, it's not so much that it's needed of LGBTQ, but it's that, you know, the people who are part of that world, for whatever reason, are animation fans, are fans of, you know, playing with the tropes of heaven and hell, and, you know, a little sacrilegious because that the world says they're against God. So I think they embrace art that kind of is about that kind of thing. But, you know, just to add a critique here, its message of inclusion and, you know, being wacky and crazy and defying the norm, it kind of undercuts itself. And again, I'm going to quote Bobby Schroeder, and I thought this was very perceptive. No matter how subversive Hazbin Hotel thinks it is with its foul-mouthed queer demon protagonists pitted against an army of angels, the series has been unable to actually say anything critical of conservative Christian values and the idea of sin. Charlie wanting to, quote, save sinners and get them into heaven is almost indistinguishable from the behavior of many real-life Christians, I'd say fake Christians, who want to convert, quote, sinful non-believers so they can atone for their actions and Jesus can, quote, save their souls. Which makes it kind of hilarious when fundamentalists hear about the show and go, oh my God, this is Amazon show is promoting devil worship. Half the time, Charlie just feels like a fucking youth pastor.
Yeah, good point.
And this is part of why I hate the Charlie character. She's just so straight and stupid and boring, and the characters just feel like stereotypes and archetypes of, ooh, we're naughty. It's such a thin show. And I guess this is harsh saying, well, that's why it's popular, but it pushes some very easy buttons. And, you know, a lot of people have made a lot of money doing that, unfortunately. So that's why.
Yeah, it's loud. It's sticky. It's obnoxious. It's crude. Yeah. It's queer. It's smoothed over by,
Not that queer is necessarily any of those things, but
no, but it is that on top of everything else. Yeah. And the color palette, the sort of pink, black, white, sort of an indigo color palette and quirky character designs, they border on creepy adorable. It's like spiky mouths. It, you know, nothing is so gross or so off-putting in terms of the idea that they're pitching hell at you, because it's all, you know, like, it's not like Edward Gorey or Tim Burton type drafts. It's more like, you know, again, more like Powerpuff Girls, something Genndy Tartakovsky would cook up. It's very saleable. It's a very saleable idea. In fact, you know, I thought of another topic we did, Noah. This is a more profane cousin of a Wednesday, the thing that launched
maybe.
What's her name? Ortega, to superstar.
Jenna Ortega.
Yeah, she, you know, like, that is a more conventional show in the Netflix mold. But, you know, the idea, the whole thing is that you're behind this really morbid little girl who, you know, has a blank affect, to where she doesn't brook any bullshit from people. And, you know, people really go for that because it's supposed to give you the idea. Oh, you don't have to be a chirpy, you know, upbeat character. You could be someone who's really gothy and, you know, ride that to success. You know, I think the thing is, this looks like it's aimed at kids.
Yeah, well, but that's part of what's kicky about it, and that's why The Simpsons blew people's minds 35 years ago.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, the idea, everything is so cute, but, right, and the Simpsons also, you know, eat my shorts and all that stuff from back in the day, the idea that you were looking at. When Bart Simpson says, or when he walks on the TV, Lisa's watching I'm an Amendment to Be, and he says to Lisa, whoa, what are you watching? He goes, oh, it's one of these throwbacks to Gen Xers or something like that. And Bart says the line, which is one of the most cynical he ever wrote. He goes, oh, yeah, we need another Vietnam to thin out their ranks. And it's like, I can't believe
I forgot about that. Yeah,
it's like, I can't believe that. Like, that was like 1992. It's like, that's
yeah, probably.
It's excellent, you know. You know, here's the thing. It's like, even though, yes, we're talking about there's an older fan base. I think what you said before, the idea is it's probably for 16 to 20. And yet I'm sure that the 12 to 16 really grouts this thing. You know, this.
Well, the young girl who the 16-year-old who recommended to me, her 13-year-old sister seemed to agree.
Look how verboten this thing is supposed to be. It's like there's a show where like a kid that age. If you watch Drag Race, which they probably do, you hear the word cunt, you hear the word fuck all the time. And believe me, this show uses the word cunt a lot. I thought that was sort of like the unholy, that was the one bit of like break glass in case of emergency. But it's like this show uses all of the George Carlin words you're not allowed to use. It uses all of them too.
Actually, I don't think cunt is on that list. Shit, fuck, ass.
Well, George Carlin. No, that's granted. That's
what were the seven words you can't say? Shit, fuck, ass. Was it cunt? Shit, fuck, ass, cunt, cocksucker, motherfucker, tits.
Cunt. Yeah, that was cunt. Was definitely one of them. But
okay.
So here's the thing. All right. So before I close this out, the whole thing about popularity is that I was dumbstruck once I started watching this show. And again, my watching of the show did not last very long, but I was dumbstruck instantly by the liberal troweling of profanity and, you know, the coarse language on top of it. Not because I'm scandalized by it, because I was absolutely fucking befuddled that you can't say shit in a YouTube video without being shuffled off to the side by the algorithm or demonetized instantly.
Give me a break.
Why is it that YouTube is where this thing got its origin? Why is it that YouTube is so gun shy over profanity? And anything like you can do right wing reactionary, you know, anything you want that is, you know, you can threaten Obama with murder on YouTube. No problem. You can say anti-Semitic things, but you can't say shit. You can't say fuck because you essentially will get, you know, blasted and demonetized. Your thing will be buried by the algorithm. You'll never get seen.
Because America is full of right wing Puritans.
Adam demanded control and Lilith refused to submit to his will. She fled the garden. Drawn in by her fierce independence, Lucifer found her and the two rebellious dreamers fell deeply in love.
Is there any possibility, any theory that holds any water in which if you were a young man today, you would have any affinity for this and not the ever-loving rage of 10,000 white-hot suns that you feel toward Hasbro?
I have a continual affinity for animation. It intrigues me. It always has. And we came up in a day where the animation of our childhood was probably terrible, but we loved it because we found the good stuff that we vibed with. You know, you could go back to like the Hanna-Barbera stuff in the 70s, which I firmly believe was made by adults who hated children. They thought children were stupid. They knew that they didn't have to care about writing or production value.
Wasn't the Flintstones Hanna-Barbera? That stuff wasn't so bad.
Well, I'm talking about like Scooby-Doo stuff in the 70s where they're running past hallways that were like three frames that were played over and over again. And
yes.
No movement, no animation. It was just really dumb, cheaply made stuff.
Scooby-Doo Hanna-Barbera? What was the Laugh Olympic stuff?
That was the word. That was the Nadir. That was all Hanna-Barbera. That was the worst stuff in the universe was all that. When they were, right. I'm just saying that stuff was terrible.
No, some of that stuff was fun.
You know, no, they treated
I'm wrong. I don't remember.
They treated animation like it was a slop bucket. They said kids will eat anything, put whatever it is out there. And it's true. The thing is you watch anything because it's like it's fucking cartoons. Cartoons is cartoons.
Well, we had three channels, right? We didn't have YouTube.
Meanwhile, we had three channels.
We watched it because it was on. Think of all the sitcoms made for adults that we watched constantly because it was on TV.
But what else are you going to do? You had like Studio Ghibli was making art from the late 70s and early 80s. The stuff that was coming out of Japan was so much better than the stuff that was in America.
But it didn't make it here.
It didn't make it because it was a cartel of companies. They said, no, animation needs to look like this. It needs to look like a fucking dog who has three character motions. That's it. You know, it's got to be Scooby-Doo or nothing else. And, you know,
I got
to
tell you, I was shocked, shocked that the ghost was actually the caretaker of the haunted
in the 19,
park.
I mean, in the 1980s. What a shock. After the whole thing about Tilden Television commercials was ripped down, but in the 81 or so, after Reagan came in, that was the, you know, then I flip into watching He-Man, Transformers, G.I. Joe, Holy Trinity. You know, that's stuff that's designed to sell me cartoons, and I made a whole way of life out of it.
Designed to sell you toys.
Toys, that's what I'm saying. Yes, toy commercials, yes. Exactly. You know, but the thing is, though, is that I, you know, it's like I stayed with animation, and again, I found my favorite spot is like Studio Ghibli, Miyazaki, circa 80s, like, Nausicaa is just about the most beautiful thing ever made. I could watch Nausicaa every single day of the week. I could watch it, just play it on a loop all the time. It's absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, what is it, like Ninja Scroll and Vampire Hunter D and these things that came out of like a golden, mid to late 80s Japan stuff was just absolutely fucking phenomenal. Akira, right? I mean, I know where my lane is, but here's the thing. This is heavily influenced by Crunchyroll, which is so popular. We never talked about Crunchyroll, no, but it's essentially a, I guess it's an app or it's a channel of the raw feed, the stuff that comes right from Korea and Japan. All the shows that we would never have seen. It's like kids grew up watching this stuff. And it's dubbed, I think, in most cases. However, it's like there's so many Japanese cartoons. Kids grew up without the sort of mitigation of American intermediaries the way we did, where the stuff was chopped up and given to us very slowly. The kids just grew up watching Japanese cartoons now with Japanese themes and Japanese storytelling conventions, which are different than our Western conventions. It's great. I don't have a problem with any of that. The thing is, though, is that this stuff is so Tartakovsky. Tartakovsky was one of those guys that came after that, too. He's very influenced by the Japanese stuff of the 80s and 90s and turned it into the Adult Swim Cartoon Network style of the early 2000s. That stuff loses me. That's the thing. It's like, so would I have enjoyed this as a kid? No, as much. It's like I'm craving, I'm scratching at the want to like it. But, you know, there's just so much about the content of this that kind of, I mean, the look of it is also very disconcerting because it's not a pleasant thing for me to watch in terms of animated style. But also, yeah, the musical theater and then the sort of weird Avenue Q cast off songs and the kind of like vulgarity.
Oh, the Avenue Q songs are so much better.
I said Avenue Q.
If you want dirty musical songs that sound like they're for kids, Avenue Q blows this out of the water.
Anyway, would you have liked it as a kid?
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, I think there's a good chance I'd like it more than I do now. You know, my tastes were more rudimentary as they are for most people. And I think there's a better chance I would have actually found it funny and actually thought the edginess was earned, instead of just kind of, you know, crazy glued on, not even crazy glued on, like fun tacked on, you know, and I've always liked musicals. And I feel like one thing I don't think I've talked about in the show is like, there's so much more opportunities for a kid to embrace musical theater. Musical theater is a little more mainstream than it was back then. You know, I mean, there are more TV shows and obviously web videos and stuff like that that embrace that world. So I could see an element where I'd like this. I can't see an element where I'd be crazy. I'd be like, you know, loving it and doing... You sent me a video of someone doing a 40-minute ASMR dressed as Charlie.
I'll have the horniest sinners knocking these walls down to get in.
We are not filming a porn as a commercial.
Why not? Sex sells, don't it? I swear, if you film me going at it with Mr. Fancy Talk Creepy Voice here, you'd be rolling in participants willing to stay at this tacky hotel.
Noah, Sign of the Apocalypse, yes and yes. Or no? Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say not really because at least there's a lot of effort into this. And like I said, I think Medrano, Vivzi Pop, I think she's got a lot of talent and I think she just needs, you know, a guiding hand. So, you know, there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot that goes, that has a lot going for it. I think the songs are good. The voice cast is good. You know, just a lot of good stuff here. So I want to say it's not a Sign of the Apocalypse, but I don't know. My whole apocalyptic view of culture, as we talk about in the show, might be shifting because we live in a world where, yes, there's laziness in culture, but also there's a lot of pointless effort. There's a lot of Herculean effort for pointless projects. There's a lot of, you know, sand mandala making. People building mountains to nonsense.
Are you talking about Skibidi Toilet now? Is that what you're referring to?
Well, Skibidi Toilet is one of them, but just like, or people cataloging shit or 2-hour videos where they analyze, you know, some movie that everyone but five nerds forgot about, you know?
Hey, I take that personally.
Right, exactly. So, you know, as the world burns, and you could say it's self-care or leisure or whatever, you know, obviously there's a lot of value to that. And I do a lot of stupid shit. I mean, I'm one to talk, but I don't know. I just feel like, I'm not saying Vivian Medrano should quit doing this and, like, you know, work for Greenpeace or whatever the hell, but I'm just saying, like, I don't know. I just feel like if this is what we spend all our time doing, like nonsense like this, it's just like, what are we doing with humanity? You know? So maybe that's overly dramatic, but it occurred to me when asking this question.
Yeah, as well. Well, I don't think it's a sign of the apocalypse, because the in a way it's bucking the trend of bullshit coming out of Hollywood, where the, you know, like the Emoji movie or Angry Birds movie or some of this, or Trolls. Jesus, we watched Trolls 2. You know, it's like, oh, talk about building a fucking gigantic, you know, a henge to bullshit, you know, just moving stones from thousands of miles away.
I'm always amazed when I see movies, even good movies, the number of people in the credits, like people dedicated their lives to just this 2 hours of, you know, meaningless, like, entertainment. It's kind of sad.
They may well have had the best bagel and what is it? A bagel with cream cheese and lox on Kraft Services may have been the best of all time on Trolls 2. You could say that person was absolutely exercising. But it's like, it's in the service of shit. That's the problem.
What's the point?
I think that, like, hoping to just, like, chip, not necessarily topple this particular henge, but the idea of chipping a few slivers of stone away from that Cal Arts monolith is super important, because I'm so tired of seeing that same art form. Look, even if I go out and I watch fucking Pixar movies, I'm excited to see Inside Out 2. You know, it's like, I have to, you know, the shortcomings is that it comes from the same, you know, like, everybody's just, they're just breathing the same gulp of air and passing it from person to person, because they all came from that same CalArts classroom. It's ridiculous. You know, but I like what Medrano's doing. I think it's hopefully her idea, and if her ability to build an animation studio and kind of come up through Patreon, again, you pay up front and you get it later, which is, you know, not the optimal way to build art, but in this case it works, and maybe more people could, you know, come up with tycoon type stuff in that same model. I'm all for it. You know, I think this is half baked and half assed, but it's unique. And, you know, again, it's got millions with an M views on YouTube. And it's like the numbers can't lie. But let me just, there's two things I wanted to compare it to. One is a little more obscure and one of them is more well known, which is Spawn. The Todd McFarlane comic book/cartoon from the early 90s, and more recently
Todd McFarlane Spawn,
and more recently Avatar. Okay, because let me explain those two things.
I forgot about Avatar.
As well, you should. It's perfectly done.
Has anything made more money but put less of an imprint on culture?
We've had two different times to look at it and be not marveled by it, and he succeeded at not marveling us each time. But here's the thing.
No pun intended.
Both of those things, Spawn was the cartoon. I'm sure some people in the comic book is still going. It came out in 1993 or 1982.
The comic book is still going?
Still going. Yeah. Todd McFarlane.
Does McFarlane draw it?
No, he hasn't drawn it. I don't think he drew it past like 16 issues or something like that.
I can't. Oh,
but my point is that
Spawn,
and Avatar, if you're familiar with either of these things, Spawn and Avatar were both notebook doodlings from precocious Opsimath or Polymath. No, I guess Opsimath is probably the better word. Polymath whiz kid creators, people who were self-taught artists, Jim Cameron and Todd McFarlane, created these things almost as like that was one of their first things they created in the marginalia of their notebooks. They had sketchbooks that were filled with blue aliens. Cameron said this, and the same thing Spawn. Those were ideas that were, you know, the fevered imagination of a 13 or 14 year old person. Those things are, they still exist in our cultural consciousness, but they haven't really they are in Avatar has made more money than Christ. However, it still feels like the depth and complexity of something that was in a 13-year-old's marginalia, even though it's this huge thing that's been given this enormous, you know, noisy release. It's still a bullshit idea and it's garbage, and yet it's extremely lucrative. And the
dances with blue people,
and I'm saying Spawn to some degree too was this you know, like really terrible thing that's just endured on and on and on. And Todd McFarlane became a millionaire because of it, you know? And it's like, it's people don't want it as much.
Did he become a millionaire because of Spawn, or did he become a millionaire because of
The toys. Well, the company, Spawn gave enough money to start the toy company. The toy company made them all. Okay. And they started buying
baseball. It's not important. It's not important.
No, it's not. But the idea that, like, we have this space in our culture. It exists where essentially teenage juvenilia, the marginalia, the sketchbook stuff, becomes writ larger than life, and it doesn't ever increase its worthiness. It doesn't become more complex. And I'm not saying this is a sign of the apocalypse, but it's so weird to see a phenomenon like that still played out.
Well, but maybe a good thing is that this isn't a privileged white guy's marginalia.
Yeah.
This is a Latina bisexual woman, I believe is true of Medrano.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
So, someone once said, I don't even remember who, like, Hollywood will not have equality until women also make shitty movies.
So I was playing this gig, and for some fucking reason, this virtue chick was digging on the drummer, and it's like, do you know who I am? I'm fucking Adam. I'm the original dick. All dicks descend from me. You think you want drummer dick? No way. I'm the dick fucking master.
Bill, in what ways, and I know there must be some, are you jealous of the has-been hotel phenomenon?
You know, actually, it's surprising because I think there's two potential pontoons for jealousy here, and I don't really feel particularly worked up about either of them. There's the idea of the cult, the people, the viewers who were really buying into this, where it obviously speaks to them. And that, to me, I would assume is generational, because we didn't kind of have art like this. Unless you're going to consider, was it like Ralph Bakshi made a lot of beautiful animated movies when we were younger, and they were profane. You know, they were American Pop and things like that. They were really risque type, you know, like a heavy metal. You know, there was like some real adult, you know, nudity and violence and sex and weird stuff. Cartoons that were not made for kids. So it wasn't a phenomenon that was completely new to this, but it's like I am left out of the fandom of this, and that's fine, because I think this is really for not just younger people, but much, much younger people who are practically speaking a different, like, Generation Alpha language. And then it's like, you know, would I be jealous? Can I be jealous of Medrano? It's like, no, I find myself boosting Medrano. I think I'm a person who is like, I feel an incredible amount of worthiness to what she's done, and a want for her to succeed. And I don't feel like she's taken anything away from me by coming up with this, simply because I didn't have any teenage marginalia. I wasn't like a graphomaniac who had to tell a story through art and through storytelling, through creating character designs. You know, this is like, you know, few were chosen to do this. This is like, if you're into it, you get as far into it as she's done. And again, we may be sitting here slagging the art, but it's like, that is dedication. That is an inability to stop. And, you know, that's exactly who should be doing this, regardless of kind of whether the art is garbage or not.
Well, but I think we agree that she has talent and effort and diligence. She just needed a guiding hand.
It sounds patriarchal when I say something like that. I don't know how to, you know.
I mean, find her a Latina woman to be her guiding hand. I mean, I'm not saying it should be a white guy or whatever to be a guiding hand.
But let's be fair. That'd probably make more sense, though.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how the industry works. I'm a little jealous. I put a lot of effort into my stuff, and it didn't get picked up by a production
company. And you too you could not stop. You don't sit still. You're the same.
No, I could not stop. Yeah, it's true. I could not stop. And, you know, part of what's jealous is the times I came close to, like, mainstream attention, it was picked apart so much. You know, like, I'll give you an example. One time years ago, had a meeting with a production company because they were hoping to launch a trivia TV show, and they wanted writers. And someone who worked with them said, oh, I know a guy who does this trivia, you know, does live trivia events. You should talk to him. So I go in and meet with these guys, and these guys were idiots. And the idea was, it was like Cash Cab. It was like a hidden camera show, but the guys are asked questions while they're at a strip club. So basically the idea is where the strippers will be asking them questions while giving them a lap dance, right? Great. Anyway, these guys could not get past. It's like they weren't listening to me. You know, they're like, tell me about yourself. And they had done no prep work at all. They didn't look me up. They didn't read anything about myself. But all they cared about was that I had no TV writing experience. So I was there because they wanted a trivia show, and I had trivia writing and, you know, to some extent, production experience. And they couldn't get past that. So it was this sense of, like, my crazy ideas don't even get out of the gate because it doesn't align with your non-crazy ideas, frankly. And the fact that she just got her crazy idea, and, you know, whatever, her thing was way more popular than my thing was, you know, in different media, but had a lot, she had a lot more following, right? I mean, I wasn't on YouTube, so I didn't have as much reach. But like, I don't know, that I, as soon as I got the sliver of mainstream attention, I was picked apart to the point where it might as well not have been me. And, you know, it shut it down every time. And that she just gets taken whole cloth, you know, no editing, essentially. She gets to put her ideas out there with no overseeing or no compromises, I suppose. And I don't know, maybe she made a ton of compromises, right? You know, maybe this isn't really the problem.
The compromises are not part of the sort of fable that we're reading. The myth, or what do you want to say? The myth of his creation, well, doesn't really lead with that. And it's pretty explicit. Like what she went through,
yeah,
doesn't really include that as part of the creation myth. Let's
The compromises aren't the things that I think, the compromises that I believe she needed to be made, from what I can gather. She needed to make, rather. So yeah, I'm jealous of that. But, you know, how many times do I have to talk about this bullshit of like, oh, I've worked so hard and no one cares, which is, you know, me whining. So forget about it.
What about the scale, Noah? What about the fallopian scale, XYZ axis?
Fallopian scale, that named after that great talk show host, Mr. Fallopian Tube.
Jimmy Scallop, yeah.
Jimmy Scallop, Jimmy Fallop.
Jimmy Bivalve.
All right, so you said skibbity toilet,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Something that is bizarre, doesn't really.
The great art,
a lot
of our
better
age
than this.
Yeah,
I like Skibbity Toilet a lot better than this, I gotta tell you.
I kind of did too, so actually. It's weird.
Yeah, I don't know. It was more interesting in its weirdness, yes, right?
It's more metal. It's actually, the taste is more my level. Is nonsensical.
Well, that too. Yeah. So Skibbity Toilet times something that I strongly believe this is. I mean, you said Powerpuff Girls, which I think is accurate, but Steven Universe. This is like, if you like Steven Universe when you're 12. You're into Has-Been Hotel when you're 22. That makes perfect sense to me.
Yeah, sure.
So Skibbity Toilet times Steven Universe. Now you're way too high on the list. Divided by, and I'm just like, who's someone we talked about not too long ago who bored the fuck out of me? Morgan Wallen. So there you go.
Morgan Wallen. How about that, huh?
Yeah.
Well, this was utterly tedious and pointless. It is chased down by a dedicated cult of viewers who seem to vibe with the coarseness and blunt appeal, I would say, of the subject matter. So, using those criteria, Noah, I pulled out from the ether our old subject of UFC, mixed martial arts fighting, that we did like way early at the beginning.
Dude, I like MMA, UFC way more than this.
No, I can't.
Yeah, there's something primal about that. Even if it doesn't vibe with you, there's something primal.
This thing
feels so.
I don't.
Not
well, it's, again, it's like it has to do with the fact that the fan base, in a way, like UFC is way bigger than this could ever be. So, actually, it's funny because
you think so?
My notes auto-corrected to IFC, the cable channel. That's ridiculous. It's not quite the same thing.
Your autocorrect knows what you're about.
Also, I think UFC came to my brain because I watched the new Roadhouse with Gyllenhaal the other night.
Is that good?
Oh, it's terrible. It's fucking. It's, you know, the problem. It's like, why remake this movie if you're not going to make it the sort of dirty, sleazy confection that the '89 original was? But because we can't.
Because you're an idiot. Because you're in Hollywood and you're an idiot.
We can't show boobies. We can't show sex. We can't do exploitation, we can't do sleaze, and that's why it's just not possible anymore. It's ridiculous.
Wait, why can't they do? They can't make an R-rated Roadhouse?
No, there's violence. You will get violence, but you will not get any more exploitation because women. I don't blame them for this. Women don't want to be naked anymore, and they don't want to ask women to be naked in movies the way it was just commonplace that a woman was cast in 1989 to be topless four times across a movie, and that's the only reason.
Yeah,
she's there.
I guess. I mean, I still believe, but maybe this is beyond Hollywood. You could have a topless woman who still has agency and power and kicking ass.
I don't exploit your actors, but show me exploitation. Depict exploitation. I want to see lascivious.
Oh, right. So treat the actors. Yeah, but
I want
to
see. I want
to women
see,
who you can't afford to pay them enough to put themselves.
I'm just
in
saying,
that
it's like, yeah. I want to see prurience and lasciviousness and sleaziness portrayed in my art, but you can't get that.
You
anymore.
Can find that online pretty easily if that's what you want.
I want it in Roadhouse.
The plot might be lacking, but you can find. Periods. Anyway, on that note,
I think that closes us out. I think we're all the way here.
Yeah, very nice.
Show.
Very.
How we get there again?
Nice.
I don't know. Somehow, look at the map. All right, everybody, find past episodes of this show on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google Play. Tweet to us at NoahAndBillShow. Write to us NoahAndBillDon'tGetIt@gmail.com. Give us a review in the aggregators because aggregator heat engenders more algorithmic push. I guess.
Yes,
please. We're not really getting it, but that's in theory how it's supposed to work. I'm on Twitter, at William Scurry. I'm on Insta. I'm on Facebook. I'm on all those things. Bluski, my Polish Bluski. Cousin. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm on YouTube, youtube.com/AMCaesar. I'm on other podcasts. I really haven't done anything recently, but I'm sure I'll be on another guest starring another podcast soon. But here, Noah will tell you where you can and cannot find him.
Check out bigquizthing.com. Learn about America's finest providers of corporate and private live trivia events. No strippers involved. What do we got coming up? I don't know. We're already starting to book for the summer. It's exciting, Bill. Exciting things happening.
I can't believe it.
We don't have to skip next week. I'm headed for Minneapolis on Wednesday, but I'm back late Friday night. So we can record Saturday morning, our usual time.
You'll be jet lagged, though, unfortunately, yeah.
It is a 2-hour time difference, my friend.
That is true. Yeah, forget about that.
So it's fun. I like traveling for work. But we do events nationwide, worldwide. Check out bigquizthing.com. In person, virtual, hybrid. You need it.
All right, everybody. So until the next fucking episode of the Cunt-Ass Show, we put motherfucking profanity in it to try to get kids to listen to our fucking show.
We don't get it.
An American Caesar Enterprises production 2024.